The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you confused by legal issues like bankruptcy, divorce, or your constitutional rights? Let us help you sort out the legal process and make sense of the law for you. Welcome to Legal Sense with host and attorney James Andrews. We're ready to take your questions by phone or email and help you find the legal answers you need and the help you want. Now, here's James Andrews.
Good morning. Welcome, first of all, to our first show. This is Legal Sense with James Andrews. I'm your host, Attorney James Andrews, that is. And before we get going, I'd like to just make a couple of acknowledgments. I wanted to give a couple of thank yous to people who allowed the show to happen this morning and us going forward. First and foremost, to my executive producer, the fabulous, marvelous, and yeah, there she goes smiling, Miss Eva Bowen, the man that helped to get this going, Mr. Ray Ellis, and all the staff here at Voice America. Also like to thank our guest for this morning, Mr. Michael Duffy, an attorney out of Philadelphia, and Miss Michelle Dunn, who's a debt collection expert, who will be able to discuss with us this morning issues of debt resolution, what have you. Also, before we get going, and this is something we'll do before every show, I want everyone to understand that this is a show about the law, but this is not specific legal advice to your situation. So I just want you to understand that we're here to give you guidance, but we do with, and we can't make it any more clearly stated than this. We very much emphasize that you, per your personal circumstances, seek specific legal counsel of an expert in your jurisdiction, as many of the matters we're going to discuss are generically based federally, but different states may have different means or avenues to deal with your specific situation. So, again, welcome to our first show. Welcome. We're happy to see you here. We're broadcasting live from Phoenix, Arizona. We have a very important show for you today, some very knowledgeable guests to give you the information that you need. First, like I mentioned a minute ago, Mr. Michael Duffy, who's going to share with us some thoughts on bankruptcy, how you can get your creditors to stop bothering you, as well as many of the other concerns you may have about bankruptcy. You know, there are a lot of there's a lot of folklore out there, a lot of myths, which will help to debunk. Secondly, we'll be speaking with Ms. Michelle Dunn. She's a former owner of a credit and debt collection company. You know, those spooky people that call you while you're eating dinner and send people out to knock on your door. And she's going to help us get a better understanding of what they can and can't do. We're going to discuss the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and some other matters, which help you to protect yourself against these, as I call them, bullies in the night. But just to let you know, we're also taking calls and emails. If you have anything you'd like to get a little bit of insight about, you can call us at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us email at legalsense@andrewslawplc.com. Again, that's legalsense@andrewslawplc.com. Again, I'm your host, James Andrews, and our first guest this morning is Mr. Michael Dunn. Mr. Dunn is an attorney from
Duffy.
Excuse me. And there goes. I was waiting for her to chime in. I knew it was going to happen sooner or later.
Change Michael's name.
Yes, and I apologize for that. You can call it a rookie mistake. But we're going to have Mr. Michael Duffy, that is, on the line with us. Michael, are you there?
I am here.
Perfect, perfect. I'll give you a quick intro. Had a quick minute to speak with Mr. Duffy before we got on the call this morning. For those of you who are listening from the East Coast, he's a resident of the Philly area, a graduate of Rutgers Law School. And has an awesome website which you can visit. Michael, you want to give him that URL?
Yeah, that is mduffylaw.com.
Excellent, excellent. And he's an expert in bankruptcy, debt collection, and a number of other matters dealing with distressed, as I call them, distressed debters. So, Michael, you know, is there anything you'd like to preface any of your statements with, any overall, you know, tidbits you'd like to give about bankruptcy before we delve in here?
Well, just to remember that it's an option for people. A lot of people shy away from it and have just a hesitancy to even discuss the topic, but it's a legal right that debtors possess, and what my job is to help them through the process.
Excellent, excellent. Well, fortunately for the audience this morning, they've got two bankruptcy attorneys on the line from varying jurisdictions, so there may be some nuances we may be able to delve into. But, you know, the first question I know I see when I have a client coming in, you know, you get those that are just happy to go. They're like, I got to get these people off my back. Got to get all these creditors to stop calling me. They're freaking me out. But then you have those who are dour, you know, particularly those that really feel like they've worked harder their lives and that the worst thing they could ever do is file bankruptcy. You know, that for somehow, some way, they're letting down the American public. You know, and I kind of have to give them a quick reality check. Let me ask you, in line with that, when do you think it's proper for someone to file a bankruptcy? I know that's a broad question, but.
Yeah, well, there's no firm rule, but usually we look to see, first of all, what's their general debt amount. If it's somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000 and up, well, you know, then it becomes a possibility. You look to see if your debts are greater than what your assets are, and also what your income is to see if you're able to meet your bills every month. But usually when someone is considering that as an option, when bankruptcy is on the table, it's because, it is something that may be a good move for them at that point.
Okay. Okay. What are some of the big, you know, big green lights when someone walks in your office, you know, immediately that this person needs to file a bankruptcy? You know, for instance, an impending foreclosure or someone that's already been sued and they've lost in court and there's a garnishment. Are there some other big, I guess if someone is facing this issue, you say they definitely need to go consider a bankruptcy?
Well, a lot of times when they're at that point, their credit is not an issue. What they're looking for is a fresh start. And when it seems to the point that the debt becomes unmanageable, particularly if there's a lot of credit card bills, medical bills, about half of all clients have some issue with medical bills. So when those are factors, that's usually when it looks very likely that bankruptcy is an option.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correct, I absolutely agree. When you've got a slew of medical bills, you've got a garnishment, you've got collection efforts, those are telltale signs of a pretty solid party to file. Now, help the audience here understand, what does bankruptcy do for them? Why should someone file bankruptcy?
Well, the first thing that it does is put into place what's called an automatic stay, and that means all collection actions must stop. You're probably being bothered by creditors pretty bad at the point you're considering bankruptcy, and as soon as you file, there's a court order preventing all creditors from taking any action, be it phone calls, letters, court actions, or otherwise. And in fact, as soon as you hire a bankruptcy attorney, you start referring creditors to them, and creditors are scared of the court. They don't want to, you know, make the wrong move. So they'll go through the bankruptcy attorney. You don't have to worry about them bothering you at that point. And then, of course, after you complete the process and you receive your discharge, then you're no longer responsible for the debt. It's not your debt. It's discharged, and the creditors can never bother you about it again. So that's the ultimate goal in a bankruptcy.
Right. Okay. And now let's get an understanding of what debts are dischargeable and what aren't. Actually, first, if you can explain to the audience what a discharge is.
A discharge is the court saying that you are no longer legally responsible for that debt. So nothing can be done to try to collect from you upon that. It's removed from your credit history, and it's no longer your responsibility.
Okay, excellent. And most debts are, now I'm sure you get a lot of these clients that want to come in, and one of the big white elephants in the room today is student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to us about discharge and student loans?
Well, the fact is student loans are almost never dischargeable in bankruptcy. The bankruptcy law has changed over the years, and it's become more and more difficult to discharge student debt because it's guaranteed by taxpayers. And the most recent bankruptcy law put the standard for discharging student loan debt quite high. They call it undue hardship, but the courts have interpreted that as basically meaning a permanent disability that you're not capable of earning ever again. So the fact is student loans, while they're not dischargeable, usually you can get very favorable payment terms and work with the student loan companies. They know that people go through difficult times, and we help clients to work with the student loan servicers so that they're able to have something that meets their needs, even if it can't be discharged.
Right. All right. Now, any other debts that you want to discuss that are situated similar to student loans that a bankruptcy may not be, you may not be able to discharge them in a bankruptcy, but in filing a bankruptcy based on other debt, it may be a good tool to leverage in order to negotiate better payment terms?
Well, there's some other types of debts that you can't discharge. If there's alimony and child support, certain recent taxes. So there are debts that will follow you through. But what it does, bankruptcy, is put you in a better position to pay any expenses that you might have. So while you might not be able to meet those obligations beforehand, once you're able to take care of some of your other debts, then you're able to meet the responsibilities that you have and, of course, have some left over so you can start rebuilding your financial picture.
Perfect, perfect. All right, so enough about the debts we can't get rid of in a bankruptcy. let's just talk for a minute about some of the benefits of it. Going back to that dour client that walks in a room thinking they've let the world down, talk to me about, why shouldn't someone feel bad about filing bankruptcy?
Well, the fact is they have a legal right. It's a tool like any other in the legal system, and every creditor is aware of this when they extend credit to individuals, and they agree to it as a condition when they extend credit to a debtor, that the debt may be discharged in bankruptcy. And the fact is, and I know you're going to talk about this more later, that creditors will use every tool in the legal system to mercilessly get every penny they can from a debtor, if it's garnishing their wages or draining their bank accounts or repossessing their vehicles or taking their homes, they'll do it to get their money. And debtors have a right to use the law to protect themselves, and that's what bankruptcy is for.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. America was in part built on getting away from debtors' prisons. So, absolutely.
Exactly.
All right, so what will happen then? Now, obviously the concern is, first concern is people's ability to meet their monthly obligations, and that's why they're even sitting in our offices discussing options so that they can at least pay rent or mortgage, what have you. But then the second, one of the major second concerns is, what about my credit? What's going to happen to my credit once I file bankruptcy? How do you generally answer that question?
Well, the fact is that if they're considering bankruptcy, their credit is probably already poor, or it soon will be. There's some people where they know that the day is coming that they're not going to be able to make that last payment. And at that point, their credit will suffer. After a bankruptcy discharge, all of their debts are wiped off their credit report. So in most cases, after their bankruptcy is complete, they suddenly have no debt. Now, what remains on there is a record of the bankruptcy filing, but as it begins to age, it becomes less of a factor, and what they're able to do is start rebuilding their credit. They have to be responsible, of course, and learn from the lessons of the past, but they have a chance to improve their credit going forward. And then after the bankruptcy ages a few years, usually they're able to start qualifying for good credit again. They're able to get a car loan, eventually able to get a home loan. And the bankruptcy does drop off their credit report eventually. After 10 years, it's required by law. So they're able to get a fresh start, which is the purpose of the bankruptcy.
Perfect, perfect. All right, we've got to head into our first commercial break. But when we come back with Mr. Michael Duffy, expert bankruptcy attorney with offices in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, we're going to run into the subjects of the different forms of bankruptcy that are available to consumers, such as Chapter 7 and Chapter 13, and what are the differences. But while we're offline, if you have any questions, go ahead and please email us and go ahead and queue us up on that phone number. And we'll be right back in about 360 seconds, back with you here at Legal Sense with James Andrews.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Bankruptcy, real estate, injuries. Are your legal problems keeping you up at night?
There is no law firm more dedicated to seeing you receive a desired outcome than the team of attorneys and legal professionals at Andrews Law. With over a decade of extensive professional experience, we are focused on giving our clients expert service and reasonably priced solutions to their legal woes. Our practice serves clients throughout the United States. We also deal with immigration and estate planning matters. We take pride in our successes and will always be honest, even if that means telling you that your case will not have the outcome you desire. Spanish speaking? We have resources to assist clients and communities who speak several languages, including French, Creole, and Farsi. If you need help, call us today to schedule a consultation. We can quickly determine the most cost-effective, efficient, and hard-hitting course of action for you. Don't settle for less. Get the best legal advice in difficult times. Call Andrews Law at 1-888-955-9111. That's 1-888-955-9111. Or visit AndrewsLawPLC.com. Andrews Law. Communication. Competence. Commitment.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Legal Sense with James Andrews. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to legalsense@andrewslawplc.com. Now, back to the show.
This is James Andrews back with our special guest, Michael Duffy. And again, let me make this disclaimer. This show is information about the law, not legal advice. Today, we're discussing bankruptcy and debt resolution options. And I'm fortunate to have Mr. Duffy here on the other on the line. We were talking in the last segment about generally about bankruptcy, why you can, why you shouldn't feel bad, and the fact that it is your legal right. Just one of those funny things, you know, you think about some of our successful businessmen in America, Robert Kiyosaki and Donald Trump in particular, who's kind of infamous for having filed bankruptcy. I don't know how many times. You know how many times he's filed bankruptcy there, Michael?
I lost track somewhere.
Right, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of the running joke, Zsa Zsa Gabor and her wives, Donald Trump in his bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. So, but okay, as we're coming into the next segment here, I wanted to start discussing some of the nuances in that form, in bankruptcy. Questions are always asked. So Chapter 7 versus Chapter 13, what's the difference?
Well, the difference, the big one, is if there's a home that maybe you're a little behind on the payments. If I have a debtor that comes in and they say we rent or we have a home with almost no value in it and we just want to wipe our debts clean, that's usually when we'll look at Chapter 7 first, because that's just liquidating the assets and wiping clean the debts. And it's over and pretty quickly, usually within about a month to 3 months, depending on the process. Now, if we have someone that comes in and says, I have a home, I have a lot of value in it, and I'm 10 months behind and they're foreclosing on the house, at that point, that's usually when we'll look at Chapter 13, when you can set up a payment plan for other creditors, but it stops the foreclosure and you're able to get up to date with your back payments and but protect your home. It also has to do with the income levels. You have to qualify for Chapter 7 because, again, it wipes everything away. But with Chapter 13, again, you set up the payment plan, and usually you're able to pay less of what you owe. So you do get some of your debt discharged, maybe all of it, but you keep your home, and that's the important part.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting you said that. My general, and the key word here is general because there's always exceptions, but general thought is anybody that qualifies for a 7, if they're not trying to maintain or retain an asset, I would generally advise them to go forth with the 7. Would you concur or give some different advice on that?
Yeah, usually that's the goal. If there isn't a house involved that or significant assets, usually they want to qualify for a Chapter 7, and 13 is the fallback, yeah.
Right, and I guess I would add on top of that, Chapter 7s are a lot simpler and a lot easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 13s can go on for quite a while, and when we start talking about issues of credit, the key thing here is the discharge in a 7 should be within 90 to 120 days of filing. Whereas that discharge in that 13 is going to be generally 3 to 5 years. And tell me if you know the statistics on this. I think most people who initiate a Chapter 13, it's 65 to 70% of them don't finish the plan?
Yeah, that's a pretty good statistic. You have to keep that going, like you said, for 3 to 5 years, and you have a trustee watching what you're doing. And if you have one bump in the road along the way, what can happen is they reject your plan, and you're back to square one. So yeah, it's much less certain, and you really have to watch what you're doing. You also can't get any new credit when you're in your Chapter 13. So if you want to get that new car, and you want to do that with a loan, you're going to have to get approval from the court, or more likely just wait it out. So there's another price you have to pay there.
It's like an adult being on an allowance.
Exactly. Yeah, you have someone looking over your shoulder.
Right. Okay. So in a bankruptcy, let's dispel some myths here. Does the bankruptcy petitioner, and the petitioner is the person that's filing a bankruptcy, do they lose everything after a bankruptcy?
Almost never. The purpose of the bankruptcy is to provide distressed debtors with a fresh start, not to completely wipe them out. So when people come in and they say, you know, I have furniture in my house, I have an old car, I have two cats that I love, or they're going to take my cats. And I explain to them the creditors don't want your cats, they don't want your old clothing, and they don't want usually that old car. But you have what are called exemptions. Right. Where the law says that you're allowed to keep up to a certain amount. This varies greatly by state. But you're allowed to keep a certain amount through bankruptcy to allow you to start over. So in some cases, that means your home.
Right.
It could be your car. It could be the stuff in your house. There's a lot of categories. This is what you do with your attorney is find out what fits where. Cash. But you're allowed to keep them through your bankruptcy. And also pensions, 401ks. They're pretty much completely exempt, so you don't lose everything when you file, and usually you're able to keep quite enough to start over with afterwards.
Excellent. You know, some of the bigger exemptions, and I know out here in Arizona, the exemption for the homestead exemption is in excess of $175,000. It was actually just reduced because of the downturn in the real estate market. In California, if I'm not mistaken, it's $150,000+. And I only bring that up because it is pretty sizable. Most people don't have in excess of hundreds of thousands of dollars in the equity in their home. So with that being one of the major things people are looking to protect when pursuing a bankruptcy, that kind of gives them the comfort to know they're not going to lose their house, at least, if nothing else. So, and I guess second to house, what do you generally find that people are trying to protect? Do you find it's cars, retirement accounts?
It's usually a car. Car or cars is what's the biggest concern, because people have jobs, they need to get to them. So, of course, the car is what they're interested in. And, again, a lot of stuff just doesn't really factor into the bankruptcy equation when it comes to household goods. That's not something that a creditor, it just doesn't make sense to try to get it, because it would cost more to get the bed out of your bedroom than it would selling it on Craigslist or whatever they would do if they got it.
Right.
So, you know, usually it's a car. Most people don't have huge assets when they're considering bankruptcy. So, you know, it's just the things to get by in daily life.
You know, it's actually funny you said that. Just a quick funny story. I think the first bankruptcy I ever did, had a client, him and his wife, and they used to fight about that old car he used to keep in his garage that he was working on forever. And one of the questions that he brought up is, would he be able to keep his car? And he was asking because he wanted to keep it. His wife was interested because she wanted them to take it. Lo and behold, he was able to keep his, I guess it was like a 1975 Camaro that he was looking to refurbish. So now he was able to keep it. It's still on the blocks in his garage to this day, collecting dust. But, all right. Well, let's get on to the subject of other people in the bankruptcy. I think a lot of times people are concerned about the co-signer or the spouse or the ex-spouse, for that matter. How are, in situations where there's a co-signer on a debt, how are they generally affected by the party who files bankruptcy?
Well, if you file, you're the only one that is protected. So that means if anyone else's name is on that debt, they're going to be the one that is solely responsible for it afterwards. So that's always something that you want to consider. A lot of times it is a couple that comes in, and the spouses will ask, do we have to file jointly? Now, it depends. If both of their names are on the debts and one files, the other one could be responsible for it. But if they're separate and only one spouse's name is on the debt, then that usually means that they're able to do it separately, and maybe the other spouse's credit won't be affected.
Let me actually add just a caveat here. Community property is also the law of your jurisdiction is going to be determinative of whether the other party is going to be responsible for that debt. There is a difference between if it's your mom, your sister, versus your spouse.
That's right.
In many states, the courts are going to look at whether the party that co-signed with you benefited from the use of that, specifically looking to see if it's community property or not. But I think you're absolutely right. 9 times out of 10, it comes down to if they're on it, they're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Now, I am not married anymore. Well, I'm actually married, but the question is, I am not married anymore, but only the name, and it's only my name on my debt. You know, how is their credit going to be affected if I discharge the bankruptcy, but they don't?
Well, if you're not married anymore and it's only your name on the debt, it's only going to be your credit that is affected. So, you know, if there is, very often, though, there's an ongoing dispute in divorce cases where one party is filing for bankruptcy, the other one isn't, and you have to usually resolve that between the parties to make clear that one party is not responsible for it. But if you're sometimes as well, I have clients that come in, they say, we're thinking of getting divorced, but we want to file before. So they'll actually consider that and do the bankruptcy so they can get it over with one fee, and they'll do it before the divorce is entered.
Okay. So popular question. You know, you've got a lot of these do-it-yourself guides. I think, you know, I won't mention any of their names, but and you've got a lot of document preparers. And as you walk into these 341 meetings, which is something if you've either filed before or you're going to file, you become familiar with, you have these other do-it-yourself ways of filing bankruptcy. And, you know, I generally tell people, you know, you can file your own bankruptcy just like you can change your own oil or you can check your own heartbeat. You know, you can do a lot of the things. But why do you think it's important for an attorney to be, for a person to hire an attorney to file a bankruptcy?
Well, it's a serious legal process. It's something where the creditors are represented in the bankruptcy court. There's a trustee that's fighting for them. And you want to prove to that trustee and present your case in a manner that satisfies the trustee so that your case is successfully resolved, so that a bankruptcy court judge can look at it and sign off on it and say, you know, this is legitimate and these debts are discharged. And that's what an attorney does. They get you through the process. They make sure it's done right. There's debts, assets, exemptions. They're all quite complex. And an attorney helps you keep as much as possible through the bankruptcy and to ensure your debt is discharged. So bankruptcy is a serious decision. An attorney can help you decide if it's best for you, what type. And most attorneys, such as my office, offer free consultation, flat fees, and payment plans. So we make it affordable for almost any debtor to make sure you get the representation you deserve.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you talk about affordability. These are generally people that are coming with some form of financial distress. How much does it usually cost to file a bankruptcy?
Well, the fees vary greatly by state in terms of attorney's fees. The court charges its own fee, which it can be usually around $300. Right now it's just $306 court fee for the Chapter 7. And then, like I said, there's usually a flat fee for whatever the attorney is, and they'll set up payment plans because they know that if you're looking at this option, no one is in a great financial situation. But you're able to stop paying your debts usually once you've made this decision. So you have some extra money to try to resolve this situation, and that's what the attorney is here to help you do.
Excellent, excellent.
All right. We're not going to get a number from you or James, right?
You know,
do you know generality?
I can tell you our fee for a Chapter 7 is $7.99. It says it really big on our website.
That's really good, Michael.
Yeah, so, you know, but that's our, it goes all across the board depending on the attorney that you speak to.
Okay. So. $7.99, wow, okay. And well, let me ask this, if you don't mind sharing, what's the most costly bankruptcy you've had to file and why was it so costly?
Well, Chapter 11s, but when it comes to consumer bankruptcy, it's a flat fee, like I said. So, you know, we charge it up front, so there's no hidden fees as it goes into it. But, you know, if it's a business or if it's Donald Trump, it's going to be a different story because, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, consumers, you know, it's straightforward, and we're here to help you. So.
Okay. All right, important question. Eva just threw up this bulletin sign, and I guess she knows some people in this situation, as I guess we all do. Question is, I have a job and income, just not enough to cover my bills. Can I still file bankruptcy?
Well, in most cases, you can. The question is what type. Like you said earlier, usually the goal is a Chapter 7 because you want to get that just wiped clean. And they'll look at it and compare your income to the state median. So if you're in the 50% below that, you automatically qualify. If you're above it, your income's above that, it can become a little bit more complicated, and usually that's what your attorney would help you go through to see. They look at your expenses, they look at other factors, and see if you qualify. And then other times, Chapter 13 becomes the option, and usually that's always an option if that's what you're looking to do.
Okay, excellent. All right, we're supposed to be going into commercial right here. Our next guest, Michelle Dunn, I guess we're just having a challenge with kicking me out on the line. Michael, are you going to stay with us, or actually can you stay with us for the next segment here?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So we're getting ready to go into commercial. We'll be back with you in 3 minutes.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Bankruptcy, real estate, injuries. Are your legal problems keeping you up at night? There is no law firm more dedicated to seeing you receive a desired outcome than the team of attorneys and legal professionals at Andrews Law. With over a decade of extensive professional experience, we are focused on giving our clients expert service and reasonably priced solutions to their legal woes. Our practice serves clients throughout the United States. We also deal with immigration and estate planning matters. We take pride in our successes and will always be honest, even if that means telling you that your case will not have the outcome you desire. Spanish speaking? We have resources to assist clients and communities who speak several languages, including French, Creole, and Farsi. If you need help, call us today to schedule a consultation. We can quickly determine the most cost-effective, efficient, and hard-hitting course of action for you. Don't settle for less. Get the best legal advice in difficult times. Call Andrews Law at 1-888-955-9111. That's 1-888-955-9111. Or visit AndrewsLawPLC.com. Andrews Law. Communication. Competence. Commitment.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Legal Sense with James Andrews. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to legalsense@andrewslawplc.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, and we're back. I'm here with Michael Duffy, attorney at law in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And if I'm not mistaken, Michael, you're barred in New Jersey as well?
Yeah, we practice throughout New Jersey and Pennsylvania. That's right.
Okay. Now, do you service all the districts in both states, or what districts do you represent?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That there's different federal districts because bankruptcy law is federal law, even though it's governed by a lot of state law too. So Pennsylvania has 3 districts. We do the eastern 2. So that gets you pretty far out, gets you to Harrisburg. We don't get all the way to Pittsburgh, though. We don't do the Western District.
Okay.
And all of New Jersey.
All of New Jersey. Okay.
Yep.
Small state, my home state, the Garden State. Small state, though. Okay, so let's talk about the process then, bankruptcy process. A client comes into your office. We've talked about some of the pros and the cons, the reasons people should file. And once they've decided they're going to file, what do you say is the first step? Walk us through that process.
Well, we start asking a lot of questions because we like to hear about everything that's going on in their financial life. We need to get some good documentation from them, and that's things like their tax returns. We need bank accounts. We want to see what their pay stubs are. And the reason we want all that is because the bankruptcy court's going to want that. They look for documentation to make sure everything's in order. And the trustee, and that's the person who sits on the other side of the table. You mentioned the 341 meeting. That's when you meet with the trustee who represents the creditors. And they're going to want to see everything to their satisfaction to make sure that there's no hidden assets out there, because they get a cut. That's what I explained to my clients. The person sitting across from that table has a self-interest to find every little penny they can for creditors because they get a percentage of anything that they can recover. So they have good cause to sniff around and see what the deal is. But again, if you have a good attorney that represents you properly, that's not going to be an issue. The trustee will throw up their hands and say, there's obviously nothing here. This is all well and good. I'm not going to waste my time complaining about things, and sign off on it so it can go before the judge and you get your discharge.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so you ask a lot of questions just about their financial disposition, assets, income, liabilities, expenses, what have you. They gather all this documentation and they put it into a box or a red well or an envelope or send it to you in an email, whatever form of distribution they're going to get it to you. And you get the information, then what?
Well, that's when we start compiling their petition, which is putting it into the documents that the court needs to look at so they can review it to their satisfaction. So it's a big hunk of paper. We actually file it electronically now, so they don't need to carry it to the courthouse anymore. But we start to put it all in there along with the documentation. And once we file, that's what goes into the court. That's what goes before the trustee, and that's what starts the process.
Excellent. Okay, so you've now filed the bankruptcy. What other steps or what other obligations do clients have to meet before the bankruptcy has got to be filed? Are there any classes or anything of that nature they need to do?
Yeah, but before they file, what's now required by law, they have to take a credit counseling course beforehand. It's a pretty easy, short course. You can do it online. You can do it over the phone. And I do also want to mention that an important part, we don't just go over the documents. There's a lot of consultation with the debtor beforehand to make sure that we identify, like I said, all the exemptions that they can get and identify what their assets are, try to classify everything. There's a lot of review beforehand, so we make sure that's all settled, along with the credit counseling course, which, like I said, is real simple. And then after they file, there's another debtor education class that they have to take. And again, they can do it on the phone and do it online. It's a court-required thing. You just answer some multiple-choice questions, and then you're all set, allowed to proceed.
Right. It's a formality. It's not an ABC thing. It's
right.
Something you just have to sit through and unfortunately, just bear with it. But excellent. Okay, so now the bankruptcy's been filed. They've taken the course. Then there's this the dreaded 341 meeting. You know, people get all anxious about. I've actually seen people outside of the trustees' room. Depending on the court, it's going to be a different level of lavishness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's generally just some small room where there's a number of people going before the trustee. But talk us through that. What are some of the questions that a person may have to answer? And honestly, whether it's something they should be freaked out about.
Right. Well, you said dreaded, and that's what most clients think beforehand. But the fact is, it's not.
Right.
It is a meeting. It's not a court case. You're sitting. You're talking to this trustee, and you have all your ducks in a row. You know what the deal is. So you know you're prepared to talk to them. And they call it the meeting of the creditors. And the fact is, there's rarely creditors there. Maybe if your mortgage is an issue, you'll have someone for the mortgage company. But just almost never. It's just you and the trustee. I had a client with $500,000 in credit card debt, and I thought, will this be it? Will American Express show up? No, they didn't. So you're meeting with the trustee. And they're just going to ask you, most of it is basic information about what you wrote down. Is it true? Is this you? They might ask you about your job, your home. And it's stuff that you're going to be prepared for. And I just tell my clients, you just answer honestly, go through it step by step. And that's what satisfies them. So then they know that this is a debtor that is worthy of a discharge.
Okay, excellent. You know, it's actually kind of funny. I think in the number of bankruptcies we've done, I've seen one creditor show up, mm-hmm. and it was one of those situations where you had two older women. You know, I would say had to be sort of like golden girls in their mid-60s, but living life still, and they were obviously very friendly at one point because one of them had loaned the other money. And one of the older women was the petitioner. She's the one filing bankruptcy, and her former friend was the creditor. And, you know, it's pretty standard that no one shows up as creditors. I mean, it happens very, 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 very rarely. So much to the point that when the trustee goes, are there any creditors present, you generally see counsel start packing up and getting ready to step up and get out of their seat. And yeah. I think in this situation, the counselor was getting ready to step up, and someone stepped forward. She sat down, and she had prepared this long, lavish speech, only for the trustee to go, thank you very much, have a good day.
Exactly.
It was kind of a commentary to the effect that creditors have no reason at all to come to a 341 meeting. Most times they're going to tender whatever proofs of claim or objections to your bankruptcy they may have prior to, so there's not going to be any confrontation there.
That's right, yeah. And in Chapter 7, there's I've had people call my office, too, where they say, I want to submit a claim, and sometimes they're furious afterwards with the trustee that it was handled that way. But, you know, the fact is, and this is what they need to hear, that if there's no assets, there's no assets.
Right.
If all the property is exempt, there's nothing for the creditors to get. So the creditors that are experienced with this, they're not going to waste their time going all the way and down to wherever the meeting's held to try to waste their time and their breath to argue this, because there's nothing there.
Right.
So that's just the way it works.
All right. So now we've gotten through the 341 meeting, and they've gotten over that hurdle, which is, as we both shared, is not really that big of a deal, especially because they will be properly prepared when represented by Michael Duffy. They've gotten through that. What happens next?
Well, then, in the case of a Chapter 7, it goes before a judge to get an order for discharge. Now, it's a different route if it's a Chapter 13, like we talked about earlier, where then that's when they confirm the plan, the trustee seems satisfied with everything, and then it is a more complicated process. So then in a Chapter 7, debtors don't have to go to the courtroom. The only time they have to leave their house, really, is to go to the meeting. Chapter 13, they have to go to the courthouse. They have to go before the judge, and that's where the plan is confirmed, and they start their 3 to 5 year journey of their payment plan, at the end of which it will be discharged.
Okay, excellent. So there's only one meeting outside of the meetings that a client is going to have with you during the duration of a Chapter 7. And actually, I think it's different jurisdiction to jurisdiction with the 13. I know in certain jurisdictions, the debtor doesn't even have to show for a second meeting. It's
right.
Pretty much simply, I won't even say motion work, but it's basically plan confirmation gets approved by the trustee, and then there's no more meeting. They just continue to make their payments.
Right, that's true. Bankruptcy court, because it's federal, it's little fiefdoms.
Yeah.
they all have their own little rules, their little idiosyncrasies, their little forms that they'll want you to do, in addition to all the changes in the law.
Right.
So that's another reason why having a good local attorney is important, because they know what the trustee as well. The trustees, every trustee has their own little way of doing things, and can get really upset if you go against whatever their normal way of business is.
Yes.
They don't want to have a headache. They just want it to be easy, and they can just go over their forms, and that's it.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. All right, so now the discharge. The discharges happen. What does that mean for the debtor?
Well, that means that now if they look at their credit history, they're going to see nothing there. They're no longer responsible for that debt. And it's important to say that it's only the debt, because let's say there is a house that they're continuing to make payments on. It's exempt, and they want to keep it. They can keep on making the payments for this house in a Chapter 7, and it's exempt. They're allowed to keep it through the bankruptcy. But they're no longer responsible for that debt. And what that means is, let's say 2 years down the road, they realize we're just not able to pay for this mortgage anymore, they can walk away. And the bank will take the house in all likelihood, but they're still not responsible for that debt itself. So the debt won't go on their credit history. There's other factors to consider there, but the debt itself, there's nothing that they have to concern themselves with.
Excellent. I think that's a great segue. I think we're going to go into our next commercial break here. But when we come back, we're going to discuss exactly that, how to deal with a bankruptcy in an effort to keep your home and keep everything else together. We're going to commercial.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Bankruptcy, real estate, injuries. Are your legal problems keeping you up at night? There is no law firm more dedicated to seeing you receive a desired outcome than the team of attorneys and legal professionals at Andrews Law. With over a decade of extensive professional experience, we are focused on giving our clients expert service and reasonably priced solutions to their legal woes. Our practice serves clients throughout the United States. We also deal with immigration and estate planning matters. We take pride in our successes and will always be honest, even if that means telling you that your case will not have the outcome you desire. Spanish speaking? We have resources to assist clients and communities who speak several languages, including French, Creole, and Farsi. If you need help, call us today to schedule a consultation. We can quickly determine the most cost-effective, efficient, and hard-hitting course of action for you. Don't settle for less. Get the best legal advice in difficult times. Call Andrews Law at 1-888-955-9111. That's 1-888-955-9111. Or visit AndrewsLawPLC.com. Andrews Law. Communication. Competence. Commitment.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Legal Sense with James Andrews. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to legalsense@andrewslawplc.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back again with our special guest, attorney Michael Duffy. We left the last segment discussing the discharge. Your bankruptcy's now been discharged, so you're no longer responsible for any of the debts that were forgiven in the bankruptcy. And if it's a Chapter 7, they were all discharged. If it's a Chapter 13, much of the debt, if not all of the debt, was paid for, but you're finally at the end of the road. What happens once there's a discharge? Michael, help us understand what that actually means.
Well, that means that for whatever your previous debt was, it's pretty much gone. But what you have to remember now is that you have to keep a good financial situation, because bankruptcy, as powerful as it is to wipe away debt, it's a limited privilege in that you can only file for Chapter 7 once every 8 years. So that means that after you get your discharge, and you're going to start getting credit offers pretty quickly, many of the debtors that get discharges see that within days or weeks after getting their discharge, all of a sudden they get credit card offers showing up at their doors. Now, they're not good credit card offers. They're going to have low limits and fees, but they now have zero debt, and they have income. So they have all of a sudden a good debt-to-income ratio. And it's real easy and you see the car dealers that say, we approve everybody, just come in, and they do. So very quickly, you can immediately get more debt. And that's what you have to watch out for. Because if after 2 or 3 or 4 years, you're again in a very difficult situation, 4 years into after the discharge, you're going to have to wait another 4 years before Chapter 7 bankruptcy is an option for you. And that means going 4 years with creditors hounding you and just about nothing you can do with it in terms of getting rid of that debt. So it gives you a fresh start, but there's a responsibility that comes with it as well.
Okay. Now, I've heard this term, this Chapter 20 thing. I don't know. Tell me what that's about. This Chapter 7, and then you file a Chapter 13, and how does that work, and what situation might that be something someone has to consider?
Well, you have to look at what your specific situation is, because the Chapter 7 might not completely fix whatever your issues are. So you can look at filing different types of bankruptcy. Some people, very often, they start with a 13 and they convert it to a 7 if they're not able to make their plan payments, and but then there's issues for the home and vice versa. So, you just have to look. What we try to do is to get the debtor on the right track from the beginning so they don't have any questions going down the road and they can know exactly what they're going to do.
Excellent, excellent. All right.
I have a quick question.
Please.
How bad is it right now? I'm hearing a lot of things in the news about bankruptcy being at really, really high levels. Is it really that bad out there right now because of the economy?
I have to tell you, it's lower this year. It's still extremely high, and I think it would be even higher. They made the restrictions for filing bankruptcy much higher in 2005, right before this economic crisis hit. So it made it more difficult for people, at least, to file Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So, but it was very, very high. The statistics I've seen are that it's maybe gone down about 15% so far this year, but they're still at very high levels. So, it remains to be seen how it works going forward. But and a lot of people, it's still hitting home right now when they've been struggling on their mortgages. They've been underwater for years, and there's no incentive for them to keep their house. It makes much more sense sometimes to walk away. And if you're underwater, and that you might owe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more on your house than it's worth, the bank could take your house, and you still owe whatever is left because the bank can't get it all back. And at that point, a bankruptcy could wipe out that debt. So you're able to start over and start building your credit to get a house at a reasonable price.
Right. Just to kind of piggyback on that comment, it is bad out there. I mean, when you walk into these trustees meetings, they're still full. But as Mr. Duffy just mentioned a second ago, I think nationwide bankruptcies are down quite significantly. But, and this is just slight political commentary. Let's just let me make that preface. Bankruptcy is directly tied, obviously, to the income that people generate, the amount of debt that they take on relative to that. And as we saw a spike in bankruptcies, as people were no longer able to refinance on these second mortgages, which they were pulling out capital in order to make major purchases on, as those started to go away, people were searching for ways to pay off debt that they extended, which was beyond their income abilities. Put that in conjunction with the downturn in the economy, people losing their jobs, bang, you had sort of a perfect storm. So now as we move further away from that, as people's though incomes are relatively down, a lot of that borrowing has diminished. A number of people have already filed, but a lot of that debt has gone away. And another part of this that people aren't speaking about, and I'm a real estate attorney as well, I do have to say I'm seeing a shift in how the lenders are dealing with homeowners. Whereas if you go back a year or so ago, I would say the correlation between foreclosures and bankruptcies is pretty, pretty tight. You've seen foreclosures, relatively speaking, the number of foreclosures that are occurring are down, relatively speaking. So you're going to see a correlation with the bankruptcies, as many of these banks are moving to do modifications as opposed to foreclosures, or looking to allow short sales as opposed to those as well. You got any comment on that, how real estate has directly affected the swing up and down in bankruptcy?
Yeah, that's very true, and the mortgage companies are more forced to do those modifications. It's not what they like to do, but so they make that a very difficult process. There's a lot of people that we get, bankruptcy clients that have been in the process of a modification, or so they're told, for months. And bankruptcy doesn't necessarily have to stop that. You can still get your modification during or after a bankruptcy to lower your payments, adjust your interest rate, whatever it might be. And that's an option. But it sort of goes separately than the bankruptcy might. But you did mention as well with the downturn in real estate prices and homes being worth less, And something that's important to remember is in Chapter 13, you have the ability to get your what you owe in your house reduced to the value of your house. And if you have, you mentioned second mortgages or home equity loans, you can get those stripped off.
Yep.
So if they're above what the value of your house is, they're discharged just like all your other unsecured debt, or you pay a reduced amount. So that's a powerful tool, and you want to do that while home prices are low, because if in a year or 2 years, once the real estate market hopefully picks up, all of a sudden your house will be worth more, and all of a sudden the bank has that security. They have some value behind their loan, so you won't be able to take it off like you would now when you get an appraiser that would say, this house is worth $150,000. There's a $200,000 mortgage on there.
Right.
So you can get the court to wipe out that $50,000. And now all that you're paying for is the $150,000.
Right. Lien strips. Very good. Very good way to kind of bring this to a close. All right. We've got 2 minutes left on the show. Eva just blew up at me. She's got another important question. I'd like to take questions from her.
Well, I'm in the media, and you guys are attorneys. You know, those are two professions that people are pretty scared about typically. But how do I go about selecting a bankruptcy attorney? How do I know from the phone book or online who to select?
Yeah, go ahead and take that.
Do you like that question, Michael?
Well, you know, there you can see how they're accredited. There's some institutes like the American Bankruptcy Institute, the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys. Being a member of them, those organizations says that they're keeping up to date with what the literature is. But you can always go to the local bar associations, and they're able to give you a referral to what a good attorney is, but you just want to make sure that the attorney cares about results, cares about the clients, and sees it through to the end. And of course, that's what my firm does. So, you know, those are really at the heart of it.
You know, I would add on to that. You know, 10 years ago, the cocktail conversation was, you know, the .com stock. You know, you need to talk to my financial consultant, my stockbroker. 5 years ago, the conversation was, hey, I got this hot real estate project you need to get in on, so you need to go talk to my real estate agent. The last couple of years, who's the hot ticket? Bankruptcy attorney. And that kind of goes to, you know, you can, it's no longer so taboo that you can't talk to your peers about who they may have used or who they might know. You know, word travels, word of mouth is huge. So, you know, all the institutions that Michael brought up, as well as just doing, you know, doing your searches online, seeing what the reviews are on some people that have been used. And then also, just like anything else that's very serious, interview people, talk to them, ask them specific questions about what's important to you, what you're trying to keep. And make sure you're comfortable with them. This is someone that's going to help you achieve what's in your best interest, as opposed to just being another, you know, being a sheep in the midst of a large herd. And there's a big difference between being part of a cattle call and being someone that's intimately handled, looking at your best interest in place. So, but I think with that, we got to come to a close on our first show. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Duffy, for taking part and helping us out here. And I'd like to give this disclaimer one more time for anyone out there that's listening. This was legal information. And if you have a specific challenge or problem, please do consult with a local attorney, as the discussion we had today was very general in nature. Next week's show, we're going to be discussing, as we left off today, distressed real estate options, short sales, loan modifications, deeds in lieu, foreclosures, and I will talk bankruptcy again as well. But for all of you out there that are listening, thank you, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you again for joining us this week on Legal Sense. James Andrews will be back again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help sort out the entire legal process, one program at a time.